Okay. But, you know, I think it's important to maintain good physical health. I think life is a balancing act. It's spiritual, it's family, it's friends, it's business, it's your physical health, and it's like keeping plates up in the air, you know, spinning, you know,
right.
And you've got to try to keep them all, and if one gets out of whack, it can cause the others to get out of whack.
Absolutely.
But as I was saying, I'm a very simple person. I'm terrible at golf. That's probably a good thing. It's probably saved me a lot of money.
Yeah.
But I like to work. And I enjoy what I do, and nobody makes me get up and, oh, you have to go to work. But my father used to make me work. He always believed that it didn't matter which side of the tracks you grew up on, what color your skin was. He dropped out of school at the eighth grade and was on the streets. His parents both passed away before he was 15.
Wow.
He actually tried to hitchhike to New Jersey, where he had a sister, to get a job. He had enough money. He had to hitchhike up to Delaware, and there he had to buy a bus ticket because you could not hitchhike in Delaware. Hmm. And the true story is that he went up to buy a ticket, and the guy at the ticket stand said, there's enough bums in New Jersey already. I'm not going to sell you a ticket. And he said, I got the money. He said, don't matter.
Man.
So he had to stay awake all night, wait for that guy to change shifts, somebody else so he could buy a bus ticket and get across the Delaware River. That's how bad it was. But he was a very hard worker growing up. You know, the earliest I can remember, we lived in a trailer park, but he worked always at least two jobs.
Wow.
And he worked his way up in a grocery, got a job as a meat cutter, worked his way up in a grocery store chain.
Nice.
And then he basically laid off in the early 80s when I was in college. And, you know, he needed something to do. I was a struggling college student, so we decided we had some friends that wanted a house built. He'd done a little renovations on the side. And so we said, well, we'll build the house. So we built the house for these friends of ours.
Yeah.
It's still standing, thank goodness, on the east side of town.
Yeah.
And when I said we built it, we nailed the nails, swept the floors, and by the time we finished that.
Just you and him?
Just him and me for the most part, yeah.
Wow.
You know, the bigger things, heat and air and some of the heavy electrical, but we painted, hanged it, hung the drywall.
Okay.
By the time we finished that house, had some other friends want a house built, so we did the same thing. And then one thing led to another. But, you know, my father, when I was in high school, it was not, you know, you need to take this college prep or whatever courses and stuff like that.
Yeah, there was no course, yeah.
It was, you need to get another job. And so when I was in high school, I probably worked too much. I had three jobs. I was driving a school bus, which I used to let you do in North Carolina.
Yeah.
A double route, elementary and high school. I worked then, after I parked my bus, we lived down the street. We didn't live in Forest Oaks, but we lived down the street.
Okay.
Golf course. So I'd go work at the golf course, not as a pro, but as a raking sand traps and mowing greens. And then when it got dark, I'd go bag groceries at a grocery store.
Man.
And I was making good money. It's just, I wasn't making good grades, so but it was always understood, you know, I would go to college, do something at college, so I went off and went 1 year to a faith-based school down in Georgia, and I was just too far away and everything. I had a girlfriend here, too, so I came back, went to Greensboro College. That was too expensive, transferred to UNCG, and that was about the time my dad and I had this opportunity to build this house, and so
okay.
I got distracted with working,
yeah,
and was really enjoying that. Went back to GTCC, got my contractor's license, real estate license, and he and I worked together as equal partners. We started the company as equal partners and built it up in the 80s doing custom homes. We were doing 10, 12 custom homes a year, and then about 1990, I decided I wanted to expand the company, do production,
yeah,
and he wanted to retire, so I bought his half of the company, and I haven't had any partners since.
Okay. Prefer it that way, I take it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The way I look at it, I would rather, you know, I would feel real bad if, like, you and I were partners and I made a bad mistake and I lost your money. You know, I'd feel real, real bad.
Yeah.
I'd feel better if it's my money than your money.
That's right.
But this way, I have all the blame, but I also have all the upside.
Yeah.
And so I would rather do, you know, if I can only do 6-unit apartment building, but it's mine and I own it and I control it. I'd rather do 6 units than to have, you know, 10 partners and we do a 600-unit but I'm one tenth, and I'm really a minority vote, and I don't have control of what's going on. So, so very conservative in terms of physical. Put the money back in the company. When Dad and I started the company, we said, you know, I'm a struggling student. I don't need a lot of money. He had a little bit of retirement, not much, but a little bit. So we said, we're going to pay ourselves once a year at the end of the year. And this is what a mistake that most people start businesses make. They basically suck the life out of the out of the business before it gets going. And they said, well, I got to make 50,000. I got to make 100,000. Or I have friends that say, I got to make 200,000 a year start a business. There's not many businesses day one you're going to start printing $200,000 a year in income. So what we did is we at the end of the year, we put a third back. The first third went back into the company to grow it. Then we each split a third.
Okay.
And we lived with that even after I bought him out is how I lived. And I would only pay myself at the end of the year. Wow. Everything else got paid. Money went back in the company to grow the company. And so it was really... You know, people say, well, how'd you get where you are? I mean, from trailer park to, you know, you didn't graduate in college and you got all this stuff going. Well, it's living within our means and then some. And so, anyways, I just want to give you a little bit of history, background history and everything else. So, well, let's get back to
your
Sounds
like you have a lot of respect for your dad. I really admire that a whole lot. That's
smart.
Great.
He never went beyond eighth grade, but smartest man I ever met by far. And yet, when I was in my early 20s, I thought he was the biggest idiot out there. I think that's was amazed he could get out of the rain by himself.
Rite of passage or something. All right. So what personality trait was the main key to your success? Sounds like perseverance and hard work.
Perseverance. You know, I read one time that Sam Walton, he could have a terrible day. And there are days that I go home, I have had terrible days. But he would shake it off, not take it home, and the next day he'd be recharged, ready to hit it again. So that's the way I try to do. I try not to dwell on things too much, the negative. There's always things out there happening. And now our world is big enough that today probably we're going to have a fire in one of our buildings somewhere. You know, somebody's going to probably slip and fall on one of our properties. You know, there's probably a dozen things I could name that are not good things that are probably going to happen today just because, you know, we got 20-some thousand people that live in our properties. So something's going to happen. It's like being the mayor of a tiny town, a small town or something like that. Every day something's going to happen. Absolutely. But persevering and hard work, I still work. I take home. So I try to – I'm not the first one in the morning. I try to get in the office by 8 o'clock or so. But I'm typically close to the last one to leave. I'll typically leave somewhere between 6:30 and 7 o'clock, go to dinner, family. And then after dinner, I've got we've got a little room in our house, and I always take home a backpack full of work, and I'll go through invoices.
Yeah.
So invoices. Well, that's the life. That's if I really want to know what's going on in my companies, I get all kinds of statements and reports and stuff. But when you look at the invoices, that's where you really know what's going on in your company and stuff. So I'll go through hundreds of thousands of dollars a night in invoices. And I'll sit there and I could do it, you know, I'll have news on or something like that and I'll be going through invoices.
Seeing where the money's going and all.
See where the money's going.
Absolutely. So a typical work day when you get here, what does it look like? I mean, what's...
Just meetings. Meetings.
A lot of meetings. A lot of people like me taking the time.
Well, no, not really. You know, I had a meeting this morning. I come in, we had our land act. We have our land act meeting once a week and that's a 3.5-4 hour meeting. Where we've got four folks spread out across the Southeast U.S. They're employees, and they bring in sites. And it's pretty interesting. It's kind of like speed dating, buying properties. You're sitting, I'm sitting there in my office. I got a monitor up here, and they're pitching these sites. And
did you buy anything today?
I made I think 7 or 8 offers today on sites between South Florida to D.C. out to Texas. So
very cool.
It's pretty interesting. So. A lot of those meetings, I meet with I have 6 direct reports, and I meet with them. I give them an hour a week to meet with them.
Okay.
And it's a back and forth discussion. I have a list that I go through. Hey, you told me that we had this situation. How's that going? You know, how about this employee? Is everything okay with him? So I keep that list on each of my managers. And then I travel 1 or 2 days a week to job sites.
Okay.
you know, tomorrow, I think I'm here. Thursday, I'm going to Raleigh, checking jobs, and then Friday, I'll go to Asheville in Greenville, South Carolina, and check jobs. So.
Very nice. Have you ever, this is a little off topic, have you ever considered developing in Greenville, North Carolina?
Yes. Looked at several times. I'm not a big student housing fan.
Okay.
Some people do it and do it really well. It's an apples and oranges with us. We're market rate. And we've got some properties that are close to universities and such, but I've tried to make all of our portfolio look alike.
Sure.
So there's value. It's like McDonald's, you know, all their stores pretty much look alike and everything. So, you know, there's value there.
Right.
You know, my job is to create value, not necessarily create, you know, income, especially taxable income, but that doesn't really fit into our wheelhouse. And to be honest, we're doing less and less in North Carolina other than Raleigh and Charlotte. And we have more going on in Texas today than we do in the Carolinas.
Great.
Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. So what are you most proud of?
My family. I mean, I've got, you know, I got a lovely wife that takes care of, you know, half of everything. And then I've got three lovely daughters. And in spite of, you know, success, which, as you know, can ruin you. They you know, I think they've all been pretty successful in their own right. And then when it comes away from family, though, I'm proud of really developing people. And we've got some people here. Amanda's a good example that you know. I'll just use her because you know her. I've known her since she was about 7 years old.
Okay.
And family's good friends, and I've watched her grow up into a fine young lady. And she's smart. And she will probably run one of my companies one day, if not the whole thing, if she wants to. So, but I've got lots of smart people like Amanda, and they know you got to earn your way. And but we've got some real aggressive smart people out there that make me look good. I'm just a guy that, you know, my time's less valuable than their time, so I'm the guy that gets his picture in the paper or whatever. But you know, I've got some people that have been with me for 20-some years, and they know how to make it happen.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
What do you wish you knew at my stage, 26 years old? You know, what's something you wish you had known?
I think I would have liked to have known possibly more of direction, the real estate class that I wanted to go from a business standpoint.
Okay.
And let's make sure this isn't anybody here. But just the knowledge that I have today is knowledge. Of course, I didn't have at 26 and have anything like that kind of knowledge. And but understanding relationships and how important relationships are, be it family relationships or business relationships, and probably learning how important honesty, integrity, and trust is in the whole world of things. I got lots of people that want to be near me because, you know, success and everything, but, you know, how many people can I really
depend on
a crunch if I were to lose everything tomorrow would be there.
That's right.
You know, when you get that, that's probably a small circle compared to the people that want to, you know, hey, let's go to dinner or let's
Absolutely.
Go do this, or they want to be near me. But those are valuable people. Those are people always have your back. And I've got, you know, several dozen people here in the hallways here and out and that are with the company that really have, I feel like, my back and the company's back. And so I probably at 26 was so focused on just, I want to go conquer the world, and I'm the smartest guy in the room, and I realized, I'm not the smartest guy in the room, and I really depend on people, and the trust, the trust factor is so big.
Absolutely, that's a great answer. how can I work smarter and spend more time working on the business instead of inside the business, you know, kind of killing myself to do everything? I mean, what are your best tools to leverage your time?
Well, I've already said I'm somewhat a workaholic, and so I believe in, I need to put the time in, I need to understand these businesses that I have, so I can, one, be a good support and resource to the operation managers that run those businesses. And, it's stuff I remember my father telling me one day. I was mowing the yard. He came by and said, "Why are you mowing your yard?" I said, "Well, the grass is growing, It's obvious." He said, "Well, what can you pay somebody to mow your yard, $25, $35? Wouldn't you be better off take that time and use that looking over financial statements or something?" Yeah. I'm like, "Well, I kind of halfway like mowing the grass, I don't."
Yeah.
He said, "Well, you need to leverage yourself and look at things that you can hand off that are low, lower level things, and you need to focus more on the business." And so, that's how I've kind of leveraged myself.
Like assistance and organization. I mean, when did you hire your first assistant? Somebody to really help you with your organization?
I mean, I've had an administrative assistant for 15 or 20 years.
Okay.
And that person is a force multiplier. And then again, I'll use Amanda. Amanda, you've met. She's chief of staff.
Yeah.
So Amanda is very smart. She's a lawyer.
Yes.
So she's been out in the construction field. I had her out on job sites for a year, learning all. I mean, that's the DNA of our business is construction. So how can you be advising me if you don't know what our business is?
That's right.
So I sent her out to Tennessee, and she was on a job. She was on job sites for a year with, steel-toed shoes and hard hat and safety vest, and she earned her way there.
Wow.
And so. She's as chief of staff, and that's a fairly new position, last 6 to 8 months, is I can send her if there's a meeting I can't make, and she knows me well enough that she can speak for me, and she can also interface with some of my direct reports should I be, I'm doing more time traveling now, and business and pleasure, and she can sit in for me, not to be me.
No,
and not to make the calls that I would make, but to convey information. Be
advisor, yeah.
Right. Trust, so she's a force multiplier along with my administrative assistant, Cheryl.
Absolutely. So. That's great. Let's
see. Well, for a lot of years, I didn't have assistant. It was just me.
Yeah. So you were doing all your own numbers, your own, all that good stuff.
Well, we always, we had a bookkeeper, but I would review the financial and take care of the business side of, the business side of it until we grew. We were small. First started out, our first office was over here on Church Street in Bessemer.
Yeah.
An old quadruplex. And it was an old two-story house. And you come in the front door, and there was two little offices. Dad had one, I had one, and a little common office.
Yeah.
And then you go through that common office, open the door, and there's my bedroom.
Perfect. Yeah. Nice. That's great, man.
Yeah.
Let's see. Is there anything that keeps you up at night? Now, at this stage, maybe starting out might have been something else.
The next idea, the next concept and stuff. It's not keep me up in a bad way. I can't remember last time.
Excitement,
Something bad kept me up, but I was up 4 a.m. this morning thinking about the Rhino Times and
really
a new direction for it.
Okay.
And everything.
Well, yeah, I mean, my dad's kind of competition with Yes Weekly, but do you have any vision for that? I mean, what are you guys?
Yeah, I think we need to be more. More digital.
Yeah.
I don't think we're going to print papers in 5 years.
Nice. Yeah.
I mean, it's...
That's where it's heading. Yeah.
No one's figured out the secret code yet to how to take a print publication unless you got some of the niches like your family has, where it's the only paper in the small community, and the small community embrace. Even in News and Record, I don't know that they'll be printing papers in 5 years.
Yeah, I don't think so. I really don't.
But, we're small enough, nimble enough, we've got the resources where we can turn it. And the Rhino, and Yes too, has such a good following that, the question is, how do we leverage that? How do we get the news? We also got more of an aging readership, so we got to be careful. We experimented with the, is it DQ? That's Dairy Queen. QR codes.
Yep.
We experimented with that and didn't have the success because the average person my age and older aren't used to that. Now, people your age, you know, QR codes was a big thing 4 or 5 years ago. That's kind of passing now. So how can we get a digital format out there? And so, you know, I had some ideas that I just came to me at 4 a.m. this morning. Okay. So I was up till 6:30 thinking about them.
Taking notes and all of that.
Yeah.
Jazz. So what are some of your biggest failures starting out?
Center Point, I think, initially started out as a good success, but then it was a failure. Now I think it's a success in its own way, not necessarily a financial success.
So how do you mean? How did it go
down? Well, we started off putting together the right team, the right plans, the right location. Everything was going good. We had 50% of the units pre-sold. We started off on this project, and then a recession hit. Okay. So I had everything but timing. And so it turned into a kind of an albatross. Every time I went to borrow money on a new multifamily venture, they wanted to know how many condos you sell last quarter. I'm like, this is, you know, that represents such a small segment of what we do and our net worth. But just condos were so toxic at the time, you know, and every day you read about the, you know, a developer gave a condo project back. And so we started off, I borrowed $33 million, and I was able to keep 25% of the sales. Half of them walked away, half of them decided to go ahead and close. So every sale, every dollar, we had to pay down the loan. We paid it down to $22 million. And then I wrote the check one day and paid off the rest. And since then, kind of turned a corner, and we sold units, and we still have some units to sell, but it's a beautiful project. It's one that I think I know most of Greensboro's appreciative of.
Yes.
But it was not at all what, you know, you'd call a success financially.
Okay. So you got it before the crash, just before?
Yeah, we started working on it before the crash.
Gotcha.
But, you know, from a personal standpoint, at the end of the day, you know, I look back and grandkids one day and all that, this will be one of the things that I can say, look back on and say, I was very proud of the job our team did.
Yes.
And that the way we conducted ourselves through recession and everything else with it. So we could have easily handed the keys back to the bank and throw our hands up and walked away, and that's what most people did.
Yeah.
But we stuck with it. We wrote a big check when money was very valuable, and we could have gone out and bought a lot of distressed assets.
Yeah.
But we instead did the right thing. You know, and that's that honesty and integrity. Now, I said this is smart. You know, most Harvard MBAs would say, well, you should take $22 million and go out and buy distressed assets that you can buy 25 cents on the dollar.
Mm.
But it's not the right thing to do.
Right.
So we did the right thing. And in hindsight, it turned out to be not only ethically the right thing, but it also turned out to be a financial right thing, because banks heard about us from near and far, and still the story is out there about how we handled ourselves. Wow. And we paid off a loan during the recession on a condo project when other developers were giving the keys back to the bank. So we don't have to go out and hunt down banks. They hunt us down.
Really?
And so it's, you know, at the end of the day, it was probably the smartest thing we could have done. And we just did it not because it was smart. We did it because it was right.
That's great.
And sometimes, not always, but sometimes right is smart. But you got to be willing to take the lumps when and have your moral compass that you're following when right is maybe not smart from a business standpoint.
Absolutely. I agree with that 100%. What are some of the unforeseen downsides to, you know, becoming successful in, you know, in an overall sense, in money sense, family sense?
It distorts reality. It distorts family. I mean, there's family that...
coming out of the woodwork asking for...
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, we're brothers or something, and you're a lot more successful than I am. Hey, we're the same. You know, he must have got something I didn't get. He must have got a lucky break or something like that. It strains relationships. There's friends that we had years ago that we tried to maintain a relationship, but it was
too different.
For them, we thought of ourselves as the same people.
Jealousy or resentment? Or
I think it's a combination. Maybe jealousy, resentment, uncomfortable. Okay. I mean, I've got some family today that I think that, you know, I'd love to see them. And yeah. We don't get invited to some of the family functions we'd like to get invited to, you know. Yeah. And we grew up cousins playing and stuff like that. And like,
well, you seem like a real humble
guy. We're
the
same. We're the same people. I'm the same people. You know.
Yeah. The only thing that's different is a bank account. That's it.
Yeah. And, so, you know, that and, you know, if you got money, you got a lot of people coming after your money. You know, and you got to be wise, or, you know.
When you say coming after, they're asking for loans and everything like that?
Daily. I mean, loans.
Personal loans? They're just coming
personal up? Loans. Can you advance me? And then I get mad at you. I'm not in the personal loan business.
Yeah.
Daily get asked for charitable contributions, and you got to be a good steward.
So is there a principle you live by just saying none of that, just at all?
Well, I don't make personal. I'm not a bank. No. You know, if I'm going to, you know, I decided if I'm going to do that, I just give you, and I don't give a lot of money away. But you know, you know, I'm not going to loan you $10, you know, if it's something you really need and starving or whatever. I'll give you $10, but I'm not going to loan you $10 and expect it back, because I'm probably not going to get it back.
Yeah.
But then the charities, you know, there's so many worthwhile charities out there, but there's only so much money. And the problem in this community is so many of our large corporations that have moved out or not in existence anymore. So then you go down to the next level, which we kind of fall into, and there's a whole lot that we want to do that would just, you know, you only got everybody. Bill Gates only has so much money, you know. And so we're looking to put money into charities where we can make a difference in our community.
That's great.
And also that's in line with our belief system.
What charities are you involved in?
Well, one of the big things is JDRF, Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation, because my oldest daughter has type 1 diabetes.
Okay, wow.
But in addition to that, we support Fighting Blindness. That's an organization we host with our ballroom upstairs. We lend it out and host a number of events. Heart Ball, we're involved with that. Children's Home Society, involved with that. That's something that my wife's really good at. You know, people call me and say, I need you to be on the board. I said, call my wife. She's really good at being on boards. I'm not a board guy.
Okay. So you're not on any boards or anything like that?
I'm on the North Carolina Railroad Board. I just got put on that. And that's an interesting board.
Absolutely. I bet it is. What made you decide to be on that board over the other ones?
It's pretty interesting that the state owns the railroad between Charlotte and Moorhead City that comes up through Greensboro, Raleigh, starting at Charlotte. And they leased the railroad to Norfolk Southern. Well, with that money, they take that money and they use it for economic development. Now, the railroad is owned by the state, and each member is appointed by either the governor, the speaker of the house, or the Senate president. The neat thing on that board is you get to use that money for economic development, like that.
Okay.
The railroad has just bought the mega site down in Randolph County, and has put a bunch of money in that, and you know that has the opportunity to create thousands of jobs for Greensboro one day.
Absolutely.
And
that's
so
great.
I'm the only one from Greensboro on that board.
Okay.
And with the mega site being so important to long term Greensboro, I just, you know, I feel like I can do some good on that board. As long as I feel like I can do a little good, I'll cut the time out to do it.
That's fantastic. Let's see.
And I get paid like $600 a year.
What are some of the key qualities you look for in your employees? You know, you were harping on your employees earlier. What are some of the key attributes you look for?
Well, it's a three-legged stool hiring. One is the honesty and integrity.
Okay.
I have fired people for misleading me over $20, and I've got people that still work on this floor that are in good standing that have made $100,000 mistakes, and they came to my office and said, I just made a $100,000 mistake, and I will never make it again, and I apologize. And I may fuss a bit. I will fuss a bit at $100,000. I'll fuss a lot.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it's behind us. I don't think that person will ever make that mistake again. And they're still in good standing. But I've had people that misled me over a $20 error, and they're gone. The question, they're gone.
It's all about principles.
And so that's egg number one. If I can't trust you, I don't need. At this stage of my life, I'd rather be a one-man company than to have people around me I can't trust. And so people will tell you that's been with me, 10, 15, 20 years, that you can tell me anything, but just tell me straight and don't mislead me. And that's a hard line. That's the other thing is motivation. I look for people with energy. I look for people that, want to, have the skip in their step. I can motivate people, but it's, it's taxing to me to have to motivate people.
Constantly.
And I can motivate you from here to maybe here, but I can't take you down here to up here. I have a friend that said he used to, whenever he had a job interview applicant, his window was on his office on the front of the building, the second story. And he would watch how that person got out of their car. He knew, it's 3 o'clock, it's about time for Sam to come in for his interview. And he'd watch how Sam walked across the parking lot to the building. If Sam kind of drug and looked like he's low energy, that was a mark against Sam. If Sam got out, kind of had a skip to the step, act like he was walking with purpose and everything, and upright, then that was a good mark for Sam. So I look for people with energy and that want to be in an organization that is full of high energy. This is not a 9-to-5 workplace. I've got people that come in here way early and then people that work way late, but you stay here after 5 o'clock, you're not going to see a stampede going out the door. You come in here at 6 o'clock, half the people are still here. And I don't tell them to be here. They're self-motivated. They're highly motivated, highly energetic. The other thing is just God-given intelligence. I've stopped trying to make people with average intelligence to have lots of intelligence, and I can't do that. I don't. That's what God gives you. We got to work with it,
That's right.
And you give me someone that's a high ethical, moral person, that's high energy and great intelligence, and a handful of those, we can conquer the world.
There you go. That's great qualities. Let's see. Is this where you thought you would end up?
No. If I'd said this, my dad probably would have punched me or slapped me or something and said, "Son, get your feet back down on the ground."
That's right, yeah. We gotta
get up there and nail those shingles on. Dad, I'm going to be sitting in an office tower one day in downtown Greensboro. We're going to be flying around doing this. You must have got a hit on the head with a hammer or something, No, I did not dream that we would be anywhere near this. And even when I got married 30 years ago, or even 10 years ago, pre-recession, a recession is where really kind of rocket fuel was like, they put rocket fuel to it. And what happened there is we were in a real good place. Things started getting frothy. I started pulling back, putting capital on the side. When the recession came, I was able to go out shopping. After paying off this building, we went out shopping and bought some great assets.
Nice.
In my business, you don't make money on the front side of recessions. You make money on the back, during and the back side of recessions.
Did you see it coming?
I felt uncomfortable to where we weren't growing. We'd taken our foot off the gas in terms of the growth of the companies. And, recessions come and go.
Mm-hmm.
We're due another recession.
Do you feel like it's coming pretty soon?
I think in the next 12, 24 months, we'll be in a recession.
That's what my uncle said. He's an investment banker, and he said one's coming.
Yeah. And so it's only a fool would sit there that knows anything about, the U.S. economy or world economy and say, we got 10 years to go.
Yeah.
And it's actually healthy. It's like burning off forests. If you hear about controlled burns, controlled burns, that way, you get a lightning strike or somebody throws out a cigarette, you don't have this, this big blaze that kills all the trees.
Right.
Well, the last recession, we had gone too long probably, and there was some characteristics there with the housing and everything else that's way overblown up, too frothy. But I think we're due a mild recession. You look at the world economy there's a lot of bad stuff out there.
Mm-hmm.
China's economy is down. European economy is down. We're really the only bright spot out there right now. And but we have our own issues. You know, we're not creating jobs. We got a large segment of population that are unemployable. I mean, and it's sad. And we're not focused on that. We haven't been focused on that. But you know, you've got people that just aren't training, getting the right job skills for the day. You know, and you know, raising minimum wage isn't going to help the situation. There's people that need to invest in themselves, you know, take care of themselves. There's people out there physically that can't work today, you know. Don't get me wrong, there's some, a lot of natural, but there's some people that just haven't, I mean, that couldn't walk across the room here without giving out a breath. Well, how are you going to walk across a job site all day in 95-degree heat, 95% humidity?
That's right.
You know, you probably aren't going to, you know, last long or die, unfortunately. You know, if you don't have yourself in physical good shape. So I think our whole educational system needs an overhaul. I think we're graduating kids with crazy amounts of debt. That I was floored a couple months ago. I walked down the hall and a couple of young kids here were telling me about the amount, one of them told me about the amount of debt they had. So, but the government subsidized that. What are you paying, 1% interest or something? I said, no, 7. I said, 7? You can go get, the mafia will give you a better interest rate than that. I mean,
right now.
Who pays 7% interest? And walk down the hall, and all these kids had 7%, only if they had a, you know, it was a special impoverished situation do they get the subsidized interest rate.
Yeah.
These kids are 100,000. I mean, how much you owe? 80? How much you owe? 120? How much you owe? You know, 40? 140? I'm like, you know, what's your payments on this stuff? I'm like, well, I pay $800 a month. I pay $1,200 a month. I said, when are you going to buy a house?
And yeah.
Don't know. I've got 20 more years paying off the student loan. Wow. I mean, it's just crazy. And so that's, we're graduating kids. Number one declared major at Wake Forest, my daughter, $2 went to Wake Forest. $65,000 a year, over $250,000 education, 4 years. Number one declared major is psychology.
Okay.
My wife got a psychology degree, undergraduate.
Yeah.
You can't get a job hardly with an undergraduate.
Unless you're a psychiatrist.
Yeah. She went and got a master's.
Okay.
She was making, in equivalent to today's dollars, about $35,000 a year with a master's degree.
Can't pay that off.
So what are you going to do? So you got that. Now, do we need psychology? Absolutely. But it needs to be understood, and guidance counselors should explain to these kids that you aren't going to get a four-year degree and ever get a payback on that $250,000 education.
Yeah.
Now, if your parents can afford it, write a check and everything else, great. But if you're going to take out loans, you may want to look at a different career track. And so,
maybe, you know, some real estate investing.
Yeah. If they made me, I think we need to put more emphasis on the community colleges. If I had a son that, and or a daughter, I'll say a son because I don't have a son. I don't want this to sound selfish. But if I had a son, I've told people that I would tell him, don't go to a liberal arts four-year school unless you want to be a lawyer or a doctor or some CPA or teacher or some professional like that. If you don't know what you want to do, but you want to have your own business and you want to be a millionaire before you're 30, I can direct you what to do step by step.
I'll write this.
Go to GTCC, study electrical and plumbing and heat and air, get a job working for somebody several years, get your license, because you have to do an internship to do, you know, get your license. Take, you know, with a handful of dollars, you can then, when you're ready, hang your shingle out and start a business. My plumber, the guy that owns the plumbing company that we use, well, one of them, we got several of them. He's never in country. He's hunting big game in Africa all the time, or flying around somewhere.
Who's running his business? He's just got good managers?
Yeah, he's got people that he hires.
Okay.
But, so I would tell my son, take electrical, plumbing, heat and air, and accounting courses. And, you know, go to work for somebody, learn the business, and then hang your shingle up. Because you could be an electrician with a pickup truck, a line of credit, and $1,000 worth of tools.
Yeah,
you could be an electrician today if you had your electrical license.
Wow.
And a pickup truck and $1,000 worth of tools.
Man, so they do well. Yeah.
What other businesses can you start that's that kind of money. You know, it's limited number of people that gets into it because of the licensing process and everything.
Right.
So it's not like, oh, I'm only going to be an electrician today. No, you got to go to school. You got to get your electrical license. You know, you got to work journeyman under somebody.
Yeah.
But, you know, we have these kids instead going out getting history degrees and these degrees where they've got all the student debt, and it's, we're not doing these kids any justice. So that's a problem.
Sounds like you're very passionate about the economy and everything else. Have you ever considered, you know, running for any kind of...
Yeah, and then my wife would leave me. So then I have to go back to work because she takes half everything.
So no go.
No, you know, I see Trump, and not that I'm endorsing him whatsoever, but, you know, I would like to help, but I think I can help other ways other than being in elected office. I don't see elected office in my future at any time.
Fair enough.
You know, there's some philanthropic things I think I would rather do.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's great. All right. If...